Hey everybody, Dr. Octave here. Before we get started with episode 6 of Cartoon Violence as a Podcast, I want to run some dates by you. See if you're free. You know, maybe you'll show up. We got a great lineup of live shows coming to you in Northern California, starting with Freak Fest NorCal, September 11th and 12th, Friday and a Saturday. It's a two-day festival of chiptune bands from all over the country. This is the first Northern California edition of what used to be called Frequency Fest, which is 8-Bit LA's yearly chip festival. Music starting at 6 p.m., Friday night, September 11th, in San Jose at the SLG Art Boutique with Petroform, Clover and Sea Life, Cartoon Violence, Boa Constrictor, Everything Goes Cold, Curious Quail, and Slam Girls. And then Saturday, September 12th, we got Cyclops Rock, Here Between You and Me, the Kevin Martinez Band, Paladin Shield, Crash Faster, Astro Skeleton, and Maxo. These are $10 per day, all ages shows. Check out 8-Bit LA for more information on Facebook and online. Today's episode of Curious Quail, they are also going to be playing with Lords of Sealand and the Y-Axes September 16th in San Francisco at SF State at the Depot. Speaking of San Francisco, we've got two Cartoon Violence shows coming at you at the Showdown. It's 10 6th Street in San Francisco, right off of Market. We got a show Saturday, October 10th with the Porno Riots, the Total Bettys, Elegant Trash, and Mad River. And we got a show Halloween, October 31st, Saturday night, with the Night Falls and Suits of Steel and Elegant Trash and the Road Vikings. These shows at the Showdown are 21 and over. $8, starts at 8 p.m. So once again, Freak Fest, NorCal, San Jose, September 11th and 12th, Curious Quail, SF State, September 16th, Cartoon Violence, October 10th and 31st, 8 p.m., Showdown, SF. All these dates and more are at cartoonviolencemusic.com, where you can also find past episodes of our podcast. And please go on iTunes, subscribe, and give us a rating. And before I talk too much more, I'm going to give you Curious Quail and our favorite bird songs.
So should we turn off the fan?
All right.
Let's do this.
So we normally do it Nerdist style, where we act like we didn't just start the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
We have a conversation in progress.
Well, actually, just turn it on and we can, you know, start up whenever.
It's on.
Yeah,
it's
nice.
Always on.
It was never off.
Only not and on.
We recorded me peeing from next door.
When you were asleep earlier today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we start 24 hours before the podcast actually begins.
You ever seen Primer? I started recording 3 days ago.
Nice.
This is the 15th time we've done this. I'm just, you guys keep answering wrong.
When you said Primer, all I could think of was like, oh, I gotta paint the house. Shit.
Yeah,
I
thought about painting.
So, this is Cartoon Violence as a Podcast, and I'm your Uber host, Dr. Octave.
And I am your ultimate host, Professor Robot.
And we are here in the Quail Cave.
What's going on? We're
with a Curious Quail, of all people.
You guys want to introduce yourselves officially?
Let's go down the lines. Everybody state your name and your instrument.
ASL. Yes.
ASL. Are we going like full AOL rules on this, or more like CompuServe? Like,
Let's go. Hashtag Teen Chat from 1994.
They use hashtags in 1994.
Well, pound.
Yeah.
Pound Teen Chat.
That sounds really not okay.
Y'all remember IRC? All right.
Fnet for life.
Seriously. Hi, I'm Mike. I'm the singer and the guitarist and the chiptune dude.
I'm Aaron. I am bass and vocal harmonies.
And I'm Joey, and I am drums, percussion, weirdness.
Music video,
art thing. Stuff sometimes, yes.
Most art.
I'm building things.
Yes.
So you're the...
MacGyver.
You're the handyman?
I am sometimes that, yes. Don't call me that, though. That's, again, it's just a little dirty.
Joey has more hats in the band than most people have in Team Fortress 2. It's pretty bad.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That's what I love about you. You guys love being video game nerds.
I'm kind of unabashed about it. Like I don't give no fucks.
You guys were streaming on Twitch for a while too, weren't you?
Yeah, for a while. I was basically doing game stuff whenever I could, but predominantly it was like us like streaming our shows, and Alan, our violinist, occasionally streams some games and does fun stuff like that.
Yeah. Nice. Although I do miss when you were doing the retro gaming stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We had a show called Nostalgia Night where my buddy Spencer and I would just pick an old game and...
Which those videos are still up on YouTube. You should go check them out. Like, they're amazing. Like, the little was it, like, 15-minute segments or 10-minute segments? They're just, like...
Yeah, because the shows themselves would be, like, 4 hours live. So then we'd you know, cut it up into, like, 15-minute segments. And
Evoland was...
Oh, Evoland was great. Yeah. That game was a blast.
What's, like, your favorite old-school classic? If you could pick one game you had to play for the rest of your life.
Oh, see, okay, that's a hard one. No... Like,
this is the hardest question we're gonna ask like the entire time.
Yeah.
See, because like if it's a game that you know and love, and it's the only game you can play for the rest of your life, you probably wouldn't want that, right? You'd like want something that's, because like by that token, I would say something like Mario Paint, where I could infinitely create stuff. You know what I mean? Mm. But like favorite game of all time is probably Earthbound. So,
good choice.
Mine would definitely be Joust. Yeah. I'm very tired of that game. I played it so many times, and you know, you get to level 100 and it just starts over and you just keep going.
There's always more ostrich knights to kill.
Yeah, there are.
There's more pterodactyls to run from.
Yeah. Oh, you mean to lance in the throat.
Yeah.
That is one of those games that really has that visceral connection between the control and the response in the game. It's like driving a sports car that's low to the ground. You know, yep. You're feeling every flap of that ostrich.
They need to get force feedback, like, built into the cabs.
Oh, yeah. Like, and they should do a version like, you know, they got those motorcycle racing games where you actually get on a plastic motorcycle and it tilts. They need an ostrich that will flap up and down like a piston punching you in the butt.
Or at the very least, I found a copy for, was it Xbox, right? That that I let Aaron kind of infinitely borrow, that was like the best of old school video games. Yeah. And I bet it's not in there, but it would be great if they built in like a thing where, you know, the controller shakes when you're... When you're like, when you're playing, like the little vibration thing. So like every time you get hit or every time you hit something, it's just like.
That version of Joust was it has been the most accurate I've played. That's not actually the old Atari or the old arcade version.
I love a good remake.
That's impressive.
Super Mario All-Stars was my jam.
Yes.
Because it had the Japanese Super Mario Brother 2, which I used to play on my friend's Famicom because his parents were Japanese and he got all the games.
All the good games.
Yeah.
None of this Doki Doki Panic shit.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good
game. It was a good game.
But it was different. It was different in a cool way. I liked how it was sort of the same and sort of different. But the music for Mario Brothers 2 in America, Doki Panic, was very good. Because, of course, what Mario game has bad music?
Yeah, really.
Ooh.
The newer ones aren't super wonderful. The newest Mario Kart, I'm just like, oh, it's like wanky guitar solos and stuff. I'm not
sure. They figured out now that everybody plays that music, they're like, oh, we're going to write music that people can actually cover.
I think my favorite's probably Mario Land for the Game Boy.
Mm. That's the main theme of that. It's just beautiful. Dun.
Have you heard the like techno OC remix version of that?
No.
It's got a nice bass drop that like just... kicks it into overdrive. It's great.
There's these two dudes on YouTube. I found this video. It's got to be like 6 or 7 years old, but it's just like two dudes in a dorm room with a guitar and a violin doing that song, and it's fucking beautiful.
Joey, what?
Yeah,
what
sorry, we skipped Joey.
Oh, gosh, I'm blanking. The only thing I keep coming back to is Tetris, which is a lame answer, but it's like the kind of game that if I would think of all the games I played on the Nintendo like over and over and over again. I mean, I'd get frustrated at everything else, but Tetris I just kept going back to and going like, I'm gonna keep playing this forever. Like, and honestly, like I found other versions, you know, they've done how many different versions of Tetris type song or Tetris types games, and they just aren't as good as the Nintendo version. That's sort of, there's just something about it, the right colors, the right speed, the right, yeah, the controls.
I actually started out before I ever played Tetris. I had the DOS-based Q blocks.
Okay.
Which, Game Shop was what the game program was called, and you run it on DOS, and it has Q blocks, which is basically Tetris, then Q bricks, which is kind of like Pong, but there are these bricks in the sky. And when
Breakout.
Okay, so it's like another game that... And then there's Q Maze, which is kind of like Pac-Man-y-ish.
Hmm.
So it was just other games, but with the word cube in front of them.
Basically. One of the funny ones was Q-Synth, which was basically you're playing songs, but instead of a keyboard, you're using your computer keyboard. So different keys or different notes on the keyboard, and that's how I first learned how to play Yankee Doodle and the Mexican Hat Dance, because those were the two songs that came with the program for some weird reason.
Nice.
So was weird. That like your first venture into chiptunes, essentially?
Kind of. Well, the Atari. The Atari was before the DOS-based stuff. Because the Atari I had came out in 1983, which is the year before I was born. So I definitely grew up on that thing.
Nice. Yeah.
So what was everybody's first experience with computer music?
I grew up with my older brother's Atari 800, which has the distinction of being a computer and not necessarily a game console. Mm-hmm. So while it had cartridges that were different from the 2600, but it had like almost the exact same library, but it also had a floppy drive, like 5 1/4.
Yeah.
Yeah, 5 1/4, 3.5, right? That's
yeah.
the and so it had all kinds of just weird random software for it. And so, being able to pop something in there and, create music with some probably pirated and or written by somebody that worked for Atari and just kind of like did this as a whim and just gave it to somebody else. And then they copied it because there was no internet. But that's how I started doing the chip stuff that I was doing with Quail at the very beginning, was with an Atari.
Cool.
And you transitioned to a Game Boy from the Atari?
Yeah, I didn't know that this was even a thing that people were doing. Because I didn't have any audio output, so I was basically creating the sounds and then recording how it sounded coming out. And then, for certain notes and stuff, I would just, pitch shift it afterwards. So I create a bunch of bleeps and bloops effectively, and then just take the audio that I recorded and then throw it back in Pro Tools, and it was super super gnarly. And then when I first heard the term chiptune, which is probably about a year and a half after I started the whole Quail thing, then I checked out LSDJ and Nanoloop, but LSDJ I liked the feel of better.
Nice. So you guys were all solid group before the Game Boy stuff came in? You guys had all been rocking out together?
No.
Okay.
No, it was Mike solo for a long time, and the way the band kind of formed is really strange. It's like he was solo with a guitar, and you tell it best.
I had a laptop, a loop pedal, a guitar, a keyboard, a microphone. It was all sort of plugged into a mixer, and I would play guitar and sing something and loop the singing and or loop the keys while playing guitar on top of that. And then, chips and the Atari and the samples and all these other things would be kind of mixed in there with that. So it was just me for a while. And then Joey joined in on drums.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of just compounded for it. The project was more or less my solo thing with guests for a while. Alan joined on violin, and
that kind of limits, I think, when you're playing, you're playing coffee shops and stuff, because you can't really, most people aren't going to be able to play any bigger venues if they're playing just solo with, with a computer and that's it. And So I think I could tell, at least initially, there was the fun of playing, having a band, but there was trepidation in that there was there's a loss of control and you have to kind of, rely on the other people. But if you get a good group, then, it's kind of then he could play less guitar and focus more on the singing and focus more on the energy he was giving off to the audience. And that's sort of where we've been ever since. It's kind of built from there. Because the reality is, most of what we do could, at least on the EP, the Glow EP, and the first album, and the Instant Gratification album, most of that Mike could probably do with the same process, where it was just him and a guitar and a computer. But where's the fun in that?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of stressful because you hit the wrong loop and you're suddenly in the chorus and you didn't mean to be in the chorus. And
you have nobody to blame but yourself.
Or the computer. You can always blame the computer because, we were kind of talking before the microphone started. But the robots, yeah. You can blame robots, and the crowd loves that. They love that when the computer dies and you can be like, Oh no!
It's a robot.
We are gonna get our comeuppance at some point.
We played with a band once. What were they? Tartar Control. Their laptop was actually in a robot stand.
Nice.
It was like a chest shelf in the robot. It looked like a
Rosie from the Jetsons, kind
of.
That was amazing.
Yeah, but we were talking before the podcast. I was saying like, technology AI is in that sweet spot now where you can. It's kind of stupid and doesn't always work, but you can yell at it and be verbally abusive, and it won't retaliate.
Yet.
But we don't have much longer where that's the case. Like, soon, like, you're going to yell at Siri, and she's going to, like, flash some colors on the screen and give you a seizure.
Well, she's already being snarky, but even the snark is mostly programmers who are just being assholes or just being snarky themselves. But there's some questions you ask a Siri, and that she's like, here's the answer, and it's really, you know, I'm going to show you what you... You know, go ahead and ask me. What's the question that you ask, and then she like gives you this whole diatribe about.
There's a bunch of those, but yeah, it's all sort of coded in. But I think you called her an asshole the other day, or something, right?
Yeah.
And she said, you know, that's not very nice. Like that was her whole like response. Yeah. So.
Have you guys referred
to her as a she? That's the best part.
Have you seen the video of the black guy on the computer? I think he's British. It sounds like, and he's talking to some AI woman, like. Looks like a white woman, and she starts talking to him, and he's like, he says something about her being from the KKK, and then she responds like, I like the KKK, and he's filming his reaction, and eventually she calls him her slave, and she's like, oh, I'm your master, and he like falls out of his chair and reacts. I mean, it's obviously like partially a setup, like overreaction, but it's really funny. Like it's like, oh, AI is getting it's getting screwed up. Like,
my favorite thing is AI arguing with another AI.
Yes.
They like one AI says a noun or a phrase and the other will latch onto it and just build sentence wise off of identifying that it's a token of language, but with no context at all, and it gets wildly out of control.
This is how we end up with like Google Deep Dream, you know, the computer recognizes images of dogs and that's pretty much it.
Yeah,
dogs and eyes.
And that's the weird thing, it's all about the training set.
Yeah.
You know, if you train something on pagodas, it sees everything as a pagoda. And there's actually my wallpaper on my laptop right now is one of those pictures of where it's trained to see an arch in architecture, and then you show it any picture and it'll just turn everything into an arch. And they make really cool abstract images, but it's also like, if you think about what's happening, it's the neural network's based on our biology and the concept of how our brains work. And people that see Jesus in the clouds or, you know, Mother Mary and a piece of toast, that's because their data set was trained on religious imagery and their brain is making a best guess. This is modeling exactly what our brains do. And I think it's a great tool for like reflecting on how we see the world.
Hmm.
Also, dogs turning into snakes are cool.
So many dogs.
So how does AI affect your creative process?
What songs did the robots write? And what songs did you write?
I'm not at liberty to say, actually. The number of times that computers just absolutely failed me. I'm one of those Windows holdouts. In that I was raised on Windows and I got used to Windows and I predominantly use Windows for everything. And you know, for work, I like have to work with Macs and Ubuntu and all kinds of other things, but. Trying to get Pro Tools to play nice with Windows is way more of a hassle than it's honestly worth. But it's what I've done since the first music notes were ever put down for Quail. So yeah, there were times where sessions would just get corrupted and it would corrupt the backup sessions, or I'd lose an entire like 4 days worth of progress on something. And you know, keeping in mind that until our most recent single that we just put out, you know, a few months ago, I have mixed everything that we've ever put out. So on some form of a Windows computer running Pro Tools, and yeah, so I'm done with computers. I'm done with them. They can do their thing.
Yeah, our demo was recorded on Pro Tools on my PC, and after a version upgrade, it has gone to the sands of time. And when we needed our live backing track for our often intro song where we just rap over it, I had to restitch it from the original samples in GarageBand
the day
before a show, just because the original file was kaput.
Yep.
So
I have so many plugins that were dependent for the first two records that I just don't have access to anymore because they never made anything for like 8 or above.
Yeah.
And it's like I could find a Windows XP machine running, you know, like Pro Tools 7, but
since 10 I've been a happy camper, you know.
I just updated last night and I haven't really used it yet, but I've been hearing a lot of good things, so
it's rock solid. I think it was a 10 or 11 that introduced the non-real-time bouncing.
That was...
Or 12.
Well, it was 11. Yeah. I think, is when they started experimenting with it.
That's the best thing ever. I'm so glad they finally rewrote the sound engine to support that.
So I guess what we're trying to say here is Pro Tools should endorse this podcast.
Yes.
Hey, I think they're local, right? Aren't they in Pacifica?
They were in Daly City, but that office is gone. I used to drive by it a lot, and it's gone.
But
so
they're just a great company. They're just a great product.
Yeah. We produced using Pro Tools.
Yeah, so we produce our podcasts on it, eh?
Yeah, we do. There's a couple free audio tools I use. I mean, Audacity is great for little stuff, but love that Pro Tools. Can't go wrong.
So, like, as Curious Quail is kind of getting back on track here a little bit, as you guys have grown, how has that affected, like, the songwriting process and the creation process? Like, do you come to the band with stuff? Do you guys input things? Like, how does it work now?
General process now, it's not too much different other than our last record, After the Lights Failed, is a really good example of I would write everything and approach the band with it with I kind of have these ideas in mind, but I'm not a drummer, and that's really apparent in our earlier stuff. The drums I, you know, mostly programmed out myself with, you know, like one or two exceptions. And so being able to take something, I kind of have this idea, and then Joey would do his thing to it. And then Aaron would come up with her own vocal harmonies for it. And I'd have, like, inspiration for a bass line, but then, you know, she would more or less make it happen. And, you know, Alan, you can tell him exactly what to play, and he'll still improv 17 different things over what you asked for. So I just don't tell him what to do anymore. And it works out better for everybody.
Nice. Is it tough letting go? Like, did he have, like, shot callers or something on you guys at first? Or, like what was, like, the process of kind of making it more of a collaborative thing?
I think that's a better question for Joey, because he was in the, you know, was around during the times that the songs were written.
Yeah, so my experience is a little different in that, you know, when I first was part of the band, we had the EP... And then he was getting songs ready to put, or getting songs finalized for the first full album. And they were all chiptune based. And with the exception of one or two that I was kind of like helping write with the very tail end of some of the songs that he was writing. But a lot of it was less about writing songs and more about interpreting songs based on what he'd already put down on the track. So at first, my challenge was to take Beeps and Boops and make them make sense on a drum kit and have them still kind of have the same spirit as the original songs.
Because on that album, the drums were programmed rather than live drums.
Although, the Survivor's Guilt, which is one of the songs on Instant Gratification, I wrote the part. Now, I don't have Pro Tools. Full disclosure, I'm an Apple guy. Now here's why I'm an Apple guy. I don't know anything about computers. While you guys are over here,
Pro Tools is for Mac too. That sort of illustrates the point.
Okay.
No, the real thing is Joey.
GarageBand is free
and ledgers.
Right, but all the stuff that's free on the computer is the stuff that I use because it's free. Because I'm a cheap bastard. And also because I don't really need Pro Tools because I'm not the one who's doing most of the writing. However, in this case, it would have been very, very helpful. So what I ended up doing was literally using graph paper, graphing out the entire song, like piece by piece. So all the hi-hat parts, it was like open hi-hat, close hi-hat. And I marked out the entire song, the entire, what, 3.5-4 minute song. And then scanned it all, sent it to Mike, and he inputted it into Pro Tools because we couldn't figure out a time where the both of us could be around together because he was working where he would work at night. After work, he would have time later in the evening to work on the songs. So he inputted my parts almost exactly how I wrote them. He changed a couple little things, and I was like, this is perfect, awesome. there was at least one comment and someone reviewing the album saying, like, Joey Guthrie's drum parts are awesome, especially on this song. And I'm just in the back giggling, like, that wasn't me. That's a
there's
drum.
There's been, I think, three reviews of that record that praised the drums in that song. And your name, because they just assume because he was the
I got writing credit.
Yeah.
But the reality is, it's what was the, what's the patch that you use, or what's the
It was like three different pieces of software. Like, I was using
because the drums sound pretty good. I mean,
an acoustic drum simulator, but then I was also using like an 808 and like all kinds of other just things. The trick with fake drums is be smart with your reverb, and they don't sound as fake. Aspiring EDM musicians, there you go.
Yeah. Also, use the kinds of programs. Use the kind of programs where you've got multiple. Like, okay, the snare on this hit's gonna sound like crack, and the second hit's gonna sound like crunch, and the third hit, like, it's gonna have like different tones within the basic sound of hitting a snare. You don't want it to all sound the same. That's the kind of program that Mike was using that really like differentiated. Plus, when I wrote the part, I differentiated on purpose to like make sure he knew, like, here's where it's going to be an open close hi-hat, like, it's not going to just be like and that's it, you know, there's going to be a differentiation.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, see, at least you wrote the part.
Yeah,
so you can still take the credit from the reviews.
But the newer stuff, I mean, like on the new album, actually, on After Lights Failed, the song Reconstruction, that's a good example where the part was literally just dump. It was just a click.
I gave him a 4 on the floor, and that was pretty much it.
That was it.
And he wrote the rest of it.
I was like, how do I check? Because it was at a speed where it just wasn't going to work. And I was like, okay, how am I going to make this work? And I ended up using that as the basis for my part. The entire part, almost the entire song, there's a bass drum just kicking through the whole thing. But it worked. I couldn't think of anything better to do with it, but I could think of things to add to it to make it better.
That flavor,
yeah, to give it something other than just the bass drum.
Bam.
That Guthrie flavor. Oh. Yeah.
So Joey, who are some of your influential drummers?
So my biggest influence is Matt Cameron. He plays, you know, Soundgarden. He now playing with Pearl Jam mostly. I was really excited when Soundgarden got back together, because they're my favorite band. You know, I have all kinds of different influences, anywhere from like Danny Carey of Tool to, drummers for bands like Dave Matthews Band, but then also, you know, any number of metal bands like the Chris Adler from Lamb of God, or like, so my influences are kind of all over the place. Josh Freese, I mean, so I try to pick and choose from a lot of different people, but I really like, lately I can appreciate drummers who have the right part without having to show off, and that's what I've always liked about Matt Cameron, is he just, without showing off, he plays the right part, and it's, even if it's interesting and complicated, it's not showy. Like, if you listen to Soundgarden, you're going to find very few drum solos, even though he's a very, very capable drummer.
If you listen to us, you hear very few drum solos as well.
Our new song is the first technical. Yeah, that's true.
I'm pretty sure I saw you take a quick drum solo
in
the last
show. Rallying Cry, the newest song, second to the last one we played at the last show, yeah.
Yeah.
There's one part, because we basically all did rounds of playing solos. Joyce has a solo, Alan has a solo.
I have a vocal solo?
Yeah.
I don't have any solos.
Yeah.
And then so I was like, well, I guess, sure, I'll put a solo in there too. And it's not like super showy. It's just a real basic solo, but it works for the song. So, yeah.
Yeah, but I think that it's clean.
That's what I was going for.
And that's the thing that I really, really like about like all of your guys' songs, is they're totally, like, when you hear it live, when you hear it on the album, it's a very like clean sound, and that it's like tight and well organized. It's like working like a well-oiled machine in a lot of ways.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think,
except often the chiptune isn't loud enough.
Yeah. That's a constant problem with being, we're one of those weird outliers, because we're not a chiptune band. It's like one of the many instruments in our employ.
So you guys don't consider yourselves a chiptune band at all?
Well, like, yes and no, because it's in the same way that I wouldn't necessarily consider ourselves just a chiptune band or just a rock band. Because, you know,
or just an orchestral band,
right? Yeah, like for a while, you know, we get sort of pigeonholed, and people think that, okay, they have some kind of electronic thing going on, they must be like electropop. Like, they don't even bother listening. It's just, they're just sort of like that. Oh, okay. And so with the chiptune thing, there's always the... We're playing more non-chiptune type shows than we are chip shows. And so the sound engineers, 9 times out of 10, you know, unless we're dealing with either Dustin at Art Boutique or Paul at Bottom of the Hill, people don't know what to do with it. They just don't know what to do with it.
Even we tell them, we're like, hey, you know, I'll usually yell at them, treat it the same like as every other instrument. It's another instrument playing in the band. And it's always the same. Like, it doesn't really work out. The other thing is, ironically, if we're thinking about the history of the band, you know, the album and EP, the first two things we put out were primarily like much more bleepy and bloopy and chippy and computer sounding. And After Lights Failed, our newest one, is much more acoustic centric, even though there's a lot of chips in there. But we've gone through cycles where live, after the band kind of got going, where for a while we weren't playing with chips. We were doing all of the stuff that we could acoustic. And then there was a question of, okay, are we going to play with chips or not? Because once you play with chips, anybody who's out there who knows that plays with any sort of, you know, chip type stuff, you're going to have clicks. You're going to have to play it that same tempo always. It can, if you let it, it can sort of make the song feel static, or the songs feel static, and sort of give it that feeling like this isn't really it. You know, it's almost too computery and too like on the beat. Yeah. So it's something I struggle with, because I play to a click now at every show. But funny thing is, now that the songs are less chip centric, I would say in some ways, we get, you know, these, we're playing more, we're playing every show now with chips.
Yeah, you guys definitely have a full sound. I mean, even when you can't hear the Game Boy, like, everything is still sort of communicated, I guess you could say.
Well, right. And then we play acoustic sets where it's not even, we don't even play with the chip.
You don't have an acoustic Game Boy? Like a steampunk one?
I would, a big resonator with a sound chip in it?
I would give so much money for that.
Don't say that. There's someone out there on Etsy.
Oh, man.
You're going to need someone to keep, like, shoveling coal into it.
It's like, I just imagine this sort of, like, hurdy-gurdy with a Nintendo logo on it.
Hey, Mike, I think your brother has a new project.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about the music video that you made, Joey. So, was that, like, all your concept? Like, did you all as a band collaborate on it? And how long did it take you to make it? Because that looks, it's...
Mike, why don't you refresh my memory on how we first talked about it? Because that's the part that I have a hard time remembering exactly how...
So, two things to note. The first thing is that all of our music is a part of an ongoing story. They're concept albums. And so it's way more apparent with the most recent, but there's like this ongoing narrative in the songs and certain characters that have certain melodies, and they sort of call back in different albums. And
but most of the time, Mike's the only one who knows that that's actually right, happening.
I don't get really heavy-handed with it, so...
In fact, years ago when we played, I think it's been years ago now, when we played a show and he finally for the first time talked about some of the things that were part of the story in Instant Gratification, one or two of the band members that were in the band were like, wait, what? The song's about that? Like, he was keeping it on the down low for a long time.
When I joined the band, I kept asking Mike what the lyrics meant. He's like, I'm not going to tell you.
Which is cool. I think the songs stand on their own, which is the whole idea, right?
That's kind of part of the idea. So
that's cool. I mean, like, stuff should be left open for individuals to interpret. You know, like, right. I feel very similarly about, like, songs that I write in general. Like, not necessarily with Cartoon Violence, because it's kind of obvious what a lot of our songs are about.
Dinosaurs and robots.
But I think, like, both of us in our personal stuff, we try to be a little bit more poetic and vague if we can.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, our Star Wars song is about apartheid, but,
you know. Yeah, blowing up the Death Star is it's an analogy for the South African Mandela. Political situation.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely.
Like, we wrote that before Nelson Mandela passed away.
Yeah.
So it made more sense then. Now it's kind of lost to a generation. But I guess let's get back to the music video.
So sorry, anyway.
So there's this concept behind like all the songs.
Right. And so that the new that album is every song on there, it was part of a short story that I had written. So every song is a short story. So when we knew we wanted to do a video for this one, we had sort of brainstormed out, okay, how do we want to necessarily tell a variant of what this particular song is about? And we had talked to a couple of different directors, and there was a bunch of logistical things that it wasn't necessarily going to work out. And then Joey says, you know what? I think I can animate this. Joey's never animated anything in his life.
But you're like, fuck it, I'm doing this.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Like, roll up your sleeves, spitting in your hands, doing one of those.
Yeah, sort of. And we went back and forth for a while because we were talking about the story as it sort of, we wanted to make it vague enough so it wasn't on the nail on the head kind of thing as far as the story that Mike was, so I kind of had to coax him into telling me more of what the story is that exists so I could make sure that what I was creating was something sort of in line with that without being a complete on the nose sort of thing. And then I just went for it. I did a storyboard, and we kind of went back and forth on the storyboard, and then I started working on it. And the problem was I was working in spurts. I would get really inspired and work really, really hard, and then would just have weeks and, days or weeks where I just didn't do any work on it, either because I was too busy working or because I just was... I the thought of sitting down and drawing for hours on end and then having to animate it all was sickening.
It's almost like a metaphor for the video itself.
Yeah.
It's so, like Heart of Darkness.
Yeah, well, because the hard part is I would animate. I'd have to animate the background, which some of them were the paper I was using, some of them were pretty big pieces of paper. Most of it, though, ended up being pretty tiny. There's some pictures that we've got out that show. So anywhere, some of the pieces of paper that I was moving were, the size of, smaller than a dime. Like, definitely, like, little tiny pieces that I'd move, fragments of a millimeter. And then some of them were bigger pieces, bigger, like, fit on a size of a table kind of pieces. And, just kind of depending on what I had resource-wise and how I'd started animating. So I do the backgrounds, and I do the characters, and I try to keep the same characters throughout the story, and then I would have to videotape it, and I'd even set up the way I'd had it set up. I had a camera, and my it was my iPhone that I had a free app. See, this whole theme on an iPhone, an Apple iPhone. It was a free, it was called iMovie, or not iMovie, iMotion. I edited the whole thing in iMovie, which was also free on my computer. So I had it set up with an LP clamp that should be used to clamp, some sort of percussion instrument, on a cymbal boom mic. And that was hung over the top of whatever I would be filming. And then I would just, sometimes I'd just press a button, or I'd hook my iPhone my headphones up. And I would press a button, move it a little bit, press a button, move it a little bit. And it took a long time, to get...
You punk rock DIY to stop motion animated.
He did. He absolutely did.
And then there are whole... Because I created a version. I finished it. I sent it off to Mike and the band and kind of said, hey, what do you guys think? And we've had a few... pretty major overhauls where I had to come up with like ways, and I'd cheat where I could to not have to animate forever, but there's whole scenes that didn't make it into the video that I'd animated and put together and like everything, and then it was like it's not really working.
Mm-hmm. Toss. He's a little bit bitter.
No, only because it took a long time, but no, I'm happy with the end product for sure. Yeah. So it would always be. A little bit, it would take longer, and then be like, okay, that's going to take me another, 2 days. Okay, that's going to take me another, 6 hours. And so, it felt like it took a really long time.
People never really get how tough it is to, actually create things.
Yeah.
Like, the actual creative process, the labor behind it, is
intense. It's
really intense.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Doesn't help either when you, you know, I tend to beat myself up over little details, and it was all little details. So
no, that's what you need interns for and stuff like that.
This is like Mike mixing the first full length album.
You can't see him giving the dirtiest of dirty looks.
We ran into budget problems with After the Lights Failed. It was supposed to be mixed by somebody else, and the moment when I realized that in order to get the album out on time, I was gonna have to mix it myself, like I like nearly like crawled into a corner and cried, because mixing instant gratification was like, it was very, it took a very long time, and it was pretty traumatic experience for me. So
a lot of takes you had to go through and find the best ones.
Not even like that, it was just a matter of you know, because instant gratification was recorded in like three different houses, a couple of kitchens, a closet or two. I think Erin tracked her vocals in a closet standing on a milk crate so she could be high enough to reach where the vocal mic was.
With a nice pack, because it was really hot, which I could really go for right now.
Yeah, she was standing barefoot on a pack of ice.
This is
difference in
here.
Yeah.
Do we need to take an air conditioning
break? Yeah.
No, we suffer for our art.
That's the point. Yeah. We suffer for this. And yeah. So just between the difference in audio qualities and, you know, chorus one was tracked here, chorus two is tracked somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Getting that to line up, it sounds... like, that was all just really painful. Now, that said, After the Lights Failed, we tracked that all in one studio, you know, in more or less a straight shot of this was guitar day, we did all the guitars on this day, et cetera, and so on. So that it was a lot easier to mix in that regard.
Sweet. So, let's see.
I don't know. I think we've talked about just about everything I immediately want to
You ask. Know we didn't
are we all the way done?
I don't think so.
No, what do you need to know?
I need to know.
How curious are you?
I'm curious about, you know, Frequency Fest.
Oh.
That's what I'm curious about.
Oh, that.
Yeah. You guys say you're not a chiptunes band, and yet here you are playing this chiptunes festival with us next month.
That's the thing. We're not a chiptune band. We're just not, it's not the only thing that we do. Like,
I feel that. Like, when you listen to our studio album, there's not a single bloopity bleep from a Game Boy on it.
Yeah.
But then when you see us play live, we're doing all those songs with Game Boys. So
that was almost an accident.
That was just more like us getting sick and tired of waiting around for the right rhythm section. You know? And
Game Boy is our 10th drummer.
Yes.
Yeah. And we've had more since then too. It's not even our last drummer.
No, I think
Travis was the last drummer.
Yeah, I think he was number 9, right?
Wouldn't he be number 11?
The
Game Boy is number 10, and Travis came after the Game Boy.
I think I'm counting the Game Boy as 10th and final for now. I'm putting him above the rest.
You're putting him above everybody.
In terms of like, he's now the official.
Yeah.
At least for now.
Yeah, but I never really thought of us as a chiptunes band either, you know, honestly. I always thought of us as a nerd rock
band. It's made us more punk, which I like.
Yeah. I like that too.
Because when we're in the studio and we've got a bass and a drum kit and a guitar and some keyboards, it's like there's only certain ways you can push the band. When you start with something that's loud and bloopy and distorted, like you got to play loud and you got to play tough, and it turns into this punk thing. Like, I think as a chiptune band, we're kind of Spinal Tappy in that we try to turn the Game Boy up to 11. When we play with it,
and we're a total joke.
Yeah, like, you guys are more like a 3 or 4 on your current setup.
Yeah, I'd say.
Yeah, the hard part,
the 5-piece going.
Yeah,
like,
the hard part actually with the chiptunes, along with it usually being too quiet at a show, is because of the fact that the bleeps and bloops are all one dynamic, as you guys know, and you know when you turn it up, it's going to be that volume the whole way through the song. The only way you can have it not be that volume is if it's not there. So when we play with the chiptunes, we always have to keep that in mind. I'm sure when Mike does the programming for the chiptunes primarily, in fact, when he's writing, he's usually programming the chiptunes as well. The chiptunes that we use live are all one volume. So any volume changes, any dynamic stuff has to come from the rest of the band and kind of work around the chiptunes. So I know Mike, when he's writing the songs, is thinking about that. Like, this is a loud part, so I can put more chiptunes here. This is a quiet part, I can have a little boop, 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 but that's about it, you know.
Yeah. I know for me, it's more pressure to be on top of my game. Yeah. You know, like, if I flub, it's going to be way more obvious than if we had a live band behind us or anyone else to pay attention to. Like,
it is a danger.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but, you know, I think, you know, it kind of pushes you to be a better musician in some ways and, like, really be tight and, like, on. Especially, you know, I can, I'm not, a, I've never drummed with chiptunes, but I don't think I could do it, honestly.
It's a certain, there's a finesse that you can put in it where you actually can play, you can play around with the chip. I, you know, most drummers play, when they play to a click, they're playing along with the click, but with the click almost, like, you're playing it as if it's an instrument. You can play ahead of the beat or behind the beat and kind of have fun with it.
You're clicking with the click.
Yeah, and there's parts of the songs where I pull back a little bit on purpose or push forward a little bit on purpose.
Well, the other thing is, on the records, there is more chip drum parts that are kind of mixed in. And for the most part, live, the parts that are chip, you know, drum predominantly, I've either scaled back wholesale. I think there's like one or two left where there's like a couple of things. That, mm-hmm. So for the most part, Joey is keeping the rhythm, but he does have a click in his ear that is synced up with it. Right. So the actual, like, the Game Boy drum sound is rarely present live, but the Game Boy, the melodies, the arpeggios, all that kind of, you know, all the bloops, they're all there.
Yeah. But I mean, okay, so going back to your question about the chiptune thing, I mean, it's just one element of what we do, but it's nice because we can fit into a number of different genres and...
Yeah.
Be, you know, kind of...
It opens some doors.
Yeah. I mean, I listen to, like, Mineral Kingdom is a great example where, the hell is that? But they're amazing, but it's what the hell is that, you know? Matthew Joseph Payne is a weird dude, and he writes weird music, but there's chips in there, and so it works at a chip festival.
Matthew yeah. Joseph Payne is the Paul Simon of chiptunes.
He absolutely. Yes. Unequivocally. Yeah. Yes.
I think a horn section with chiptune is... It needs to exist, and I'm glad he made it exist.
Yes. Right.
But it takes that level of, like, music brain mm-hmm. to do that. You
well,
know,
he's a, like, music technical. Teacher, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's
yeah,
got...
he's a composer sort mm-hmm. of first.
You know? And also an electronic whiz.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, we used to do something similar to this as a live stream show on Twitch for okay. World Studio in San Francisco. And he came on one time, and we had, like, a power adapter that was broken for the portable line mixer. We had to wire everything up into the broadcast camera to get it out onto Twitch in, like, a stream so that it wasn't sync delayed with the video.
Right.
And he was just, like, MacGyvered the hell out of the situation with wire clips, spliced in an alternate power supply, and made us have the power we needed to go live.
Fucking
and
insane.
He's, and then performed a great set with banjo and Game Boys.
Banjo, Game Mural. Boy, and then his PVC trombone. Uh-huh. Like,
yeah.
And the, you know, band with the flute and the saxophone. Like,
I think that's where chiptune, I mean, from my limited experience, and I would say out of the group, I'm probably the least experienced with computer stuff. Computer music, you know, earlier you guys had asked, and I stayed quiet because the truth of the matter is, my first experience with computer music was probably more in the realm of when I was in college. I was dating someone who was a electronic music major and was, like, you know, would go into these places and create this music, and it would be like coming through, you know, an eight speaker surround sound thing, and it was very, like, the kind of thing where you'd want to maybe, you know, go alter your mind and go sit and listen to the sounds bounce off walls kind of thing. I feel like this is where chiptune's kind of heading if it's going to keep progressing, is you have to be doing something different with it. Just chiptunes and, you know, just playing something over the top of it and kind of that's it. You want to kind of make it your own, whether it's costumes and weirdness and punk and dinosaurs, or whether it's orchestral and, you know, acoustic band, or whether it's banjo and, you know, well, trombone and flute.
It seems to definitely be working well for you guys. I mean, you've been getting play. I know, at least on Live 105, the local radio station here, I don't know what it's been like outside of, like, you know, the
Bay Area, liberal San Francisco bubble.
Yeah. Well, like, yeah, like we've had a fair amount of success with, you know, internet radio stations, and a couple of our songs got picked up for regular rotation for some stations out in, like, New Hampshire and Ohio and stuff like that. But you know, it's we're coming to, I think, a point where people are starting, for the most part, to understand that the Game Boy is not the genre; it's the instrument. and much like a guitar or like a violin. Like if we treated violin the same way we treat Game Boy sort of right now, we would say that every band with a violin in it is classical.
String, you know,
that,
tune.
Yeah, exactly. Like string tune. Yeah, it's sort of the same thing. So we're kind of coming to that point where it's like, yeah, stuff like Matt Payne and stuff like, you know, like you guys and us and all these different, you know, bands. So like Freak Fest is a great example because you're gonna have people that are just more or less like
a dude standing there with a Game Boy.
With the Game Boy, you know, yeah, dropping some bass and, you know, doing like some like crazy like dubstep type stuff.
Yeah, and even then none of them are gonna sound the same.
None of them are gonna sound the same. Or next person's
the
gonna
same,
get up.
Like what's this Hoosie that's
What's this Hoosie
with the dancers and the puppet show.
Oh, okay, so
show.
Boa Constrictor. I'm so stoked that he's coming to Freak NorCal. Cause so we, you know, full disclosure, we played 8-Bit LA's Freak Fest in LA earlier this year. And it was phenomenal. We were the out of town band. We came down from the Bay Area, and they were so kind, and everyone was like super awesome to us, despite the fact that we'd never even played in LA, let alone, you know, we knew these people tangentially through the internet. But that sort of sense of like chip community, it was like, hey, we're all sort of here doing weird things with our old toys.
Yeah, that is definitely the big plus, I think, to the chiptunes community in general. Like, we talked a lot about like kind of venturing away from that, but like when you perform at like one of these chiptune festivals or shows, like everybody is watching all the bands and they're all really excited to be a part of the culture and like see all the stuff that's out there. Like, I feel like it's a lot of indoor kids getting out for the first time and meeting other indoor kids in a lot of ways. And that's not meant to be offensive, but, you know.
No, it makes sense. Like, it's like when the internet is bleeding, you know?
In the scene that, like, kind of let themselves go for these shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I look at it, so the headliners of Freak LA were Mega Ran and Danimal Cannon. And so I'm not a fan of metal at all, like, full disclosure, I don't really get into it. Danimal Cannon, I will watch and enjoy the hell out of a set, even though it's just a dude shredding over, you know, music that he wrote with a Game Boy, and it's really entertaining to watch. Mega Ran is a hip hop artist that, you know, performs with a Game Boy and with old like retro game soundtracks. Like, if I told myself 5 years ago that I'd be super into a hip hop artist that does stuff with a Game Boy, like I'd think I'd fucking crazy.
Mega Ran's song with the Little Nemo Dream Master background.
Hey, all right.
That is one of my favorite things on this planet.
It's so good. It's so good. But like, so, you know, Freak NorCal is awesome because it's these super rad people from LA bringing it up to our home. You know, Art Boutique is more or less, it's our home base. It's for anyone who's Bay Area listening and have not checked out the Art Boutique, it's this rad comic shop that has a rock venue in the back of it.
Dude, like, the first time we played there for that Star Wars show, I didn't realize that was, like, the owner of Slave Labor Graphics, like, making me a hot pocket.
Yeah.
You know, like...
The man that published Johnny the Homicidal Maniac is making your food.
Did anyone else read Milk and Cheese? Because that was some great societal commentary as well. But yeah, Johnny the Homicidal Maniac... definitely a big plus. Also, Lenore, a bunch of other
Squee,
random stuff.
Squee, like, yeah. All of that.
Like, pretty much everything Jonan Vasquez built his career off of was published by this guy.
Yeah.
And he's making me some shit in a toaster oven. I didn't even realize it was him.
They have awesome beer and wine now, too. Just throwing that out
there. Now he can give me alcohol and get
exactly.
Me. Well, there you go.
Now I can get the 21 and up crowd who wants to drink at every show to come.
Hey,
out to
I'm going to the drink and draw this Thursday.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
going to try and get there, yeah.
I went, like, I think last month, I drew Galactus wailing on an electric guitar.
Nice. Yeah. Approve.
Excellent. Yeah, very approve.
Is there any other acts you're looking forward to at Freak Fest?
I mean, other than Cartoon Violence and Curious Quail.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I'm super stoked to see Slime Girls again because it's been a while since I've seen them play.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what the setup's going to be like now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pedro was kind of solo for a while, and then he sort of had some live members. And
yeah, they had a drum. Then it was just him and the drummer for a second there.
I'm really stoked. Joey mentioned Boa Constrictor earlier. So when we played Freak LA with him, this guy gets up on stage, you know, with his Game Boy. He's doing his, like, you know, it's like EDM sort of dubstepy kind of thing, all done on a Game Boy. Like, it's really good stuff. He's got, like, this, like, LSDJ gold chain. And then he's got this this chick off the side that's doing two girls, right?
Yeah,
that are doing a puppet show, like full marionettes, right? Oh, while he's performing. And then for like that was like the first like couple of songs in a set. And then he has some go-go dancers that he just like randomly hired off of Craigslist, you know, a couple hours I guess before the show, and they come up and like do these crazy like dance routines. I have no idea what he has planned for this, but it's
like Big Al. Big Al would get like dancers off Craigslist and stuff like that for a show.
But that's the thing I like is that, you know, one of the things that's cool about going to a show, if you're going to go to see a live show, is you probably want to go see a show.
Yeah.
And a lot of bands and musicians forget that. And I think a lot of the chiptune bands, because they're used to that level of stimulus maybe, or that level of creativity, or that level of weirdness or whatever, or just feeling like, let's just go for it. They're willing to kind of like try to, you know, kind of have a fun, like, let me see how weird I can get and how much the audience will go with me. And
yeah, we definitely like to get weird. Oh boy.
Yeah.
We were getting weird before chiptunes, but I think it really helped us.
Yeah. We're chameleonic.
Yeah.
In a way.
No, let's talk about ourselves.
Just be you guys have any questions for us?
No.
Yeah, who makes your outfits?
My armor upgrade was made by an artist from Oakland named Trent Nahas, N-A-H-A-S, and he has some brilliant work. Everyone should go check out his stuff.
He does a lot of work with crabs and silverware.
He'll take old action figures and like empty crab shells and like put them together. He made this really awesome crab Batman once
with seriously
like forks and spoons.
Wait, okay, so your outfit doesn't have any crab pieces?
No, it doesn't. My outfit is actually mostly an amalgamation of like a bunch of stuff that I gave him.
Oh, that's awesome.
To kind of work with. Yeah. I'll tell you a little bit more like off of the the thing, but yeah. He did some awesome work, and it's really I like it a lot more than the mask that I had made beforehand, and that because it was pretty much just a mask and a lab coat was what I would wear, and he would have the mad scientist lab coat vibe going.
Right.
And now I feel like we balance each other out, and our dinosaur bassist now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Dee the dinosaur. She's
Dee the dinosaur.
Awesome.
She's our friend, and so much more.
She rocks. She rocks on the low end.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah. All right. Well,
Should we talk about birds?
We should talk about birds
because you guys are called Curious Quail, and we do a top five songs list for every show. So we thought, why not songs about birds?
Why not?
Why not?
Why not? Indeed.
So here's how the game works. We're gonna go down our list: 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 4, 4, 4, etc. And if any of our songs on each other's lists match up, then we're going to have to fight over who gets to keep that on their list. And this month's fighting words is we're going to do bird calls, and it'll be judged by everybody else.
All right.
And the best bird call gets the victory, and then you'll have to replace that song in your list.
So they're supposed to be in order from
five to one.
Oh, well, that's the thing I gotta...
You don't have, you know, there's no need to prioritize it.
No one's if gonna grade you afterwards.
If you feel the need to prioritize it.
What if you didn't? No, I'm just kidding.
If you didn't prioritize, if you just have five songs and you just want to put them in a random order, you can, but, you know.
They're in order now.
All right. So, since we go clockwise and we let the bands go first.
I'm up
first.
Yeah,
you're up, Mr. Johnny.
All right, number five. A really random song by a really random band. That's a band. It's a song called Feather Pluckin' by Pot USA, Presidents of the United States of America.
Good song.
Nice.
Nice. They're not obscure.
No, I love it. The song, though, is just, it's off their first album, and it's all about animals playing.
Yep.
Just animals playing music and doing weird things, and it's
I think half of their songs are about animals playing music or driving vehicles.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all a metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if there's anything metaphoric. I think they're just being weird.
Maybe.
All right. So,
Aaron, you...
Okay, so my number five is The Last Bird by Zoe Keating, who's a cello artist from San Francisco. Well, she's originally from Canada, but she's based in San Francisco. And this song sounds kind of like something that you would hear on Broadchurch after somebody dies.
Nice. Approve.
We should probably point out at this point that Erin's going to be obscure because she's always obscure.
She's going to pull a Professor Robot.
Yeah.
Last month he was a pacifist. We were doing fight songs. And he picked college football fight songs.
That's not being a pacifist. That's just knowing how to get pumped up for a fight.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you had to throw in Survivor as your extra one. Start the chain reaction.
Eye of the Tiger is a classic. And yeah, if you're ever down in the dumps, just let me know and I'll send you a link to it on YouTube.
So I'll start with the one that I'm not entirely sure counts, but I'm going to say that it counts. And that is Electric de Chocobo from Final Fantasy VII.
Well, it's about... Chocobos are imaginary birds.
It's about a giant imaginary bird, and it's also, you know, a blatant Dick Dale ripoff
with the guitar riff.
Well, yeah, it's that theme, but they make it into a surf song, yeah. Which they then use for the snowboarding minigame.
I know what song you're talking about.
It's just like surfing on snow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, for my number five, I'm going to have to go with a song not only about a bird, but by a bird. Abkadevki Jekamanop Gristuvixes by Big Bird.
Oh,
my God.
Wow, you're bringing the Sesame Street.
Wow.
Dan, already dropping the mic with the Big Bird.
Don't drop the mics, they're expensive.
Yeah.
Gotta rep my 7 foot tall yellow things.
So odd looks.
I'm gonna go indie here. I don't think anyone has heard of this band, but it's a song called Sink Like Stones by the Deadly Snakes. And the song itself is probably more about failure to launch, but the chorus is, even the ducks that have frozen the lake must thaw out in the spring, but they may not fly away. They may just sink like stones.
Okay.
So.
Flightless waterfowl.
Well, no, but ducks fly. Ducks fly, but like if they're frozen in a lake, they might not unfreeze.
Sinking waterfowl.
Yeah, yeah.
More like trapped, stuck.
Yeah.
That's the metaphor right there.
Yeah. But that imagery always stuck with me, and I really like the song. So. I flipped it on you this one. This time it's all serious.
This time it's all ducks.
Yes.
That'd be great if you did all ducks.
Number four, DuckTales. Right. Oh,
it's too late to change it.
Oh,
so
all right.
We just have to sing DuckTales at the end of this podcast.
Here we go. Number four. One that is... I had to put it on because it just always cheers me up. Three Little Birds by Bob Marley.
Oh, whoa, yeah.
Yeah, it makes me happy.
My husband told me to put that on my list, and I was like, no, because somebody else is going to
Someone else
it
is
on.
Definitely going to have
well,
it.
Well, and you know I'm down for a fight if need be, so I'm leaving it on there. So
I
there.
I practiced my bird calls because I figured mine would be obscure enough.
All right. Well, that's...
Let's hope. So my next one, is number four, is Little Bird by Lisa Hannigan. She is the chick who sings all the harmonies on Damien Rice's stuff, and she's from Dublin, Ireland.
She's really good. All right,
we can't comment on it because
we don't know. You're too obscure. You win.
All right, so I'm gonna go with a B-side here, by the Smashing Pumpkins, Milidori Magpie off of the Tonight single. Really, really, really pretty song. Lots of slide guitar and it's gorgeous.
The great James Iha.
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 Iha. Got you all in check. I'm gonna go number four. I Know My Chicken by Chibo Amado.
Nice.
Wow. All right.
I know my chicken.
Yeah, you got to know your chicken. They are so good live in their current incarnation. They got the rhythm section. I don't know the guys' names, but they were so tight, and they're fronted by Nils Klein from Wilco.
Wait, what's the band called again?
Chibo Amado. It's Yuka Honda and Miho Tori from Japan.
Oh, okay.
And Yuka she just does like sequence electronic stuff and sings, and Miho is more of the MC in the group. Right. But like their core is like this electronic two-woman thing. But then live, they picked a great band to play on top of their stuff, and it's so electric. If you get a chance to see them live, they're on fire right now.
Yeah. So my next song is actually about ducks.
I knew it. I called it.
I Want a New Duck by Weird Al.
Oh,
yes.
Quality.
Yes, which is a parody, which is also kind of like putting Huey Lewis in the News on this list, which I also approve of because I love me some Huey Lewis in the News. But you can't go wrong with Weird Al, and it's a song about a duck, so it totally makes the list.
Nice. Quack, 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 quack.
How have we not had any...
That's our first Weird Al, isn't it?
For no, just for this week. I think you've done Weird Al before.
Maybe.
I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Number three.
Check the show notes. Dun, dun,
dun. All right. Yeah, I had to look at my... Because I'm really just not remember this stuff. Only has a reference, really, in the title. Comfort Eagle by Cake.
Okay.
It's on my alternates, and it's only not in my top five because it's not specifically about a bird.
Yeah.
But your thing that you sent us said bird in the title counts as well, even if the song's not.
That's true.
Yep. Yeah.
I almost went with a bunch of like people with birds in their like band names.
I the thought birds, about that, but I was like, yeah, birds. Yeah, yeah. Bands Counting Crows. Yeah.
And my number three is Magpies by Man Miracle.
Oh, that's totally on my list. Oh. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
He's like, I have no idea who that is.
Well, they're really obscure, but they're out of Oakland, so they are local. I don't know if they've made music because their last album, I think, was released in 2011. I don't know if they're still doing anything, but I saw them, I think, at a Rickshaw Stop show, and I really liked it, and I got their album. This was not their 2011 album. This was before that, and I used to just take it on tour with me everywhere and listen to it obsessively. It's
great. Cool.
Awesome.
Don't worry, hopefully we can find these on Spotify for the
They are all on Bandcamp.
Oh, shit.
And some of them are on Apple Music.
Yeah, we usually make a Spotify playlist for all these songs and anything that's not in a playlist to try to link in the show notes at least.
Nice.
Give people exposure because songs we love.
We'll do our best obscure acts.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know about the one I just said, but I think everyone else is on Apple Music, so they're probably on Spotify too.
Just Google it.
There we go. We'll Google. We'll Google it.
All right,
just
so
alphabet
ne-
it.
Next up. Albatross by Fleetwood Mac.
Nice. I thought about
Anyone?
It.
Oh no. Man. Now I feel sorry. There's it just reminded me of a song that I probably should put on my top five.
Yeah.
Too late now.
I could make a substitution.
There's no going back.
No going back. All right,
no substitution.
Number three. An egg comes out of a chicken. Ooh, a chick comes out of an egg.
Oh wow.
Egg by Mr. Bungle.
Yes, that oh my god, how did I not think of that?
Definitely top five that, favorite songs about birds.
Yes.
Oh my god.
That song is epic. That's got like seven movements and they're all crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely one of my favorite Bungle songs. I didn't even think of it. I didn't think of its connection to birds. Of, yeah.
Just inverse your thought process and it just comes out of the
egg. Oh.
All right. Prof Robot, what you got?
Lesbian Seagull.
You went there.
I mean, think of another lesbian love song about seagulls. You can't.
I can't.
Yes.
I don't know if I want to.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a beautiful song
and it's got
a beautiful message about love and acceptance and just being free.
Yes.
So I don't know why nobody else picked it. Like, frankly.
It was one of the things that came up when I Googled for songs about birds.
I know at least
one other person in this room did.
Oh, yeah.
I
know
didn't know Google for songs about birds.
I was just double checking to see if I missed anything. And I missed Lesbian Seagull.
You missed. Of course you missed it.
All right, so number two song. I had to include some Soundgarden, and there's only one song that I could think of that had a name with the birds. So it's off of their new album, King Animal, which is Bones of Birds. And it's totally like a downer of a song. But it's a really good song, and I like it, and I like Soundgarden. So there.
Soundgarden rocks. We went and saw Soundgarden with NH Nails last year.
Were you at that show?
No, I missed that show.
They were so good.
You know, I went and saw them like perform two nights in a row at the Fox Theater, and it was... Yeah, they were solid.
They're one of those bands that I can sing along to every one of their songs because they were all on the radio and on MTV and stuff.
Well, at least the ones they performed at that show,
right.
I'm sure.
I mean, I never really was a buy their album when it comes out kind of fan, but especially in retrospect and especially since they were so good at that show, it was great. It reminded me of how good of a band they really were.
Yeah, go out and get King Animal. Don't worry about the fact that they sounded not good on that song for the Avengers soundtrack. Because the new album is not like that. That song sounded like, hey, we're going to audio save it a little bit.
Chris forgot what band he was in for a moment.
Yeah, exactly. And the band forgot what band they were in for a second. So.
All right, number two.
My number two is Little Bird Courage by Old Canes. No.
Lawrence, Kansas. Although I do know there are lots of songs called Little Bird or with Little Bird in the title.
Yeah, apparently. But Little Bird Courage, that's, I absolutely love that song. It kind of reminds me of Neutral Milk Hotel a little bit.
Okay.
But they were featured on some like album, I don't know, some compilation album that my friend Zen, who I used to be in a band with, heard, and he was like, "You would love this band," and he was right. They're good.
Cool.
Nice. All right, mine's this is probably one of the most obscure on my list. By a Canadian singer-songwriter, a guy named Matthew Good. The song is called 99% of Us is Failure, and it's all about getting really, really bad news in a hospital as you're trying to cope with, you know, disease and or it's somewhat vague, but this blackbird keeps, you know, appearing at the window when you're, like, getting this, like, really, really shitty
so
news.
So it's like The Raven Nevermore?
Kind of, yeah. Like, it's definitely inspired.
Cool. Yeah, I think I used... I used to like one of his songs. What is it? My Life as a Circus Clown or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's
a great
deep
song.
Cut.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Good pick. Okay, my number two, I Like Birds by The Eels.
Oh, God.
A little on the nose, but that is a great song. Gets stuck in my head on a regular basis.
Hmm.
Nice. And I like that it's by another animal.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Animals singing about animals.
I think eels would actually get along with birds, maybe.
If they could breathe the same medium, you know, that would help.
Birds probably trying to eat eels where eels
yeah.
live.
Eels yeah. are so creepy, though. They look like they would kill everything.
Oh, but they taste so good.
Yeah,
they
so do. Unagi yeah. is so good.
Unagi is the best
food.
Unagi.
Nice.
I can't
eat it
yeah,
anymore.
Back in the day.
I saw a German, weird German art film called...
I thought you were going to say German porn.
No. German art film Same called thing. Tin Drum, and there's this really bad scene that shows how they fish for eel, and I've never been able to eat it without wanting to vomit since then, which is very unfortunate because it tastes amazing. Mm.
That sucks. I'm sorry.
Do I'll they eat- fish for them with their dicks?
No. They fish for it with donkey's heads.
Oh no!
So close to the end. So close. Almost there.
And I think this actually is... This is not the first time that eel porn may have been implied on our show.
I don't think so, no. That's how we roll here at Cartoon Violence has a podcast.
Mother of God.
Can you see eels coming through
a donkey skull's
eye hole? A rotting donkey skull. Not just like the skull, but just the whole head just rotting. It's... Oh my God.
Sounds like
Circle
something you'd
life.
See in a...
Well, that's kind of what my number two pick is all about. A Little Wing by Jimi Hendrix.
Nice.
That was on my alternates. Yeah.
Yeah. It's such
so good.
Such a sweet song. So my friend Dave, who actually lent me the guitar I currently play, has demanded that I learn how to play this song as well in order to keep the guitar. So I'm kind of fucked. I'm not that good. But yeah, no, just really freaking badass song. Can't go wrong with Jimi Hendrix. I love Jimi Hendrix.
My dad's a huge fan.
Yeah. Thank you, Aaron's dad, for liking Jimi Hendrix. Keeping it real. Shout outs to Aaron's dad.
Woo, woo. Yeah.
I learned it from watching you.
Is he going to listen to this? Is he going to listen to this?
Yeah, probably.
Hey.
He lives in Texas.
Well, I hope you're sharing this with all of your friends down in Texas.
I hope no one's messing with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that perhaps no exes live.
Yeah.
All my, near that's you. Where they all live.
Yeah, apparently. That's why did they? Why?
Because he was a horrible, horrible husband.
Oh,
not your dad, Aaron. No, I'm talking about the guy that wrote that song.
Yeah,
he certainly has a lot of ex-wives.
Why do I? I just got a picture. I just imagined like a Sesame Street like renegade group of exes that live in Texas, like little like Muppet
little
exes. Yeah, exactly.
Like letter N from
uh-huh.
the shows.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not just be like, able to get that intense Texas accent out of my head now because of that song. So bad. I heard it so many times just because I was in Texas. I didn't even mean to hear it. It just happened.
And we all heard it more than we wanted to hear it. That wasn't just a phenomenon where you lived in Texas.
Yeah. A lot of California bars had that on the jukebox.
Yeah. Well, that's unfortunate. I'm surprised.
Yeah. That and what's that other one that sounds almost exactly like it? Oh, I got friends in low places.
Oh, I got friends in low places.
Better slip on down to the places.
Yeah, bad.
This is it, though. We've made we made it all this way to number one without any bird calls. I'm really hoping
I'm hoping there someone picked the same one that I picked.
Because for me,
there was only one number one song. Because Family Guy.
Oh, I knew it.
Because you're doing it. You're going there.
Surfing Bird. Surfing Bird by the Trashmen. Yes. Yes. Yes, mostly for the break. Yes, the breakdown. Oh my God! Yes,
it's a really good song that has been desecrated.
Did anyone else see Back to the Beach? Do you guys remember that film?
Oh wait, it's like an old guy takes his family and there's like a giant wave.
He was like a Frankie and Annette, like Annette Funicello and Frankie.
I saw that way back in the day.
Yeah, so they're all grown up and they're suburban.
That the one that Fishbone's in?
I think so.
Doing the Jamaican ska song?
But, yeah, and then Pee Wee Herman, I think, shows up during the Surfin' Bird like
montage. What is this movie called?
Yeah. It's called Back to the Beach.
It sounds like a fever dream.
Like, I tried to recall this to someone else once, and like I swear
David
to God,
Byrne
they thought I was high.
This is one of those like shared hallucinations. I think
it's like the Berenstain Bears thing. Yeah. Like, how do you remember it?
I remember AIN.
I don't know how I remember it. That's the thing. I just sort of said Berenstain, but
I always said it could have gone either way. But I noticed the spelling, and maybe it's because my real last name.
I like the fact
has a weird vowel in it that's unusual in this country, and so I notice vowels.
I honestly I can't remember for the life of me what it actually was, but the fact that this like conversation has spun up and the internet is all abuzz and all the people are like, there's multiple universes and it's proven because of the Berenstain fucking Bears. I'm enjoying riding the wave.
Yeah, let's just ride it. Hopefully this isn't the darkest timeline. Yeah.
Yes.
The only one that went there, huh?
Yeah.
We all thought about it.
Everybody thought about going
there. Some of us have brake pedals in our minds.
I have no brake pedals.
Okay, you've gone.
Joey has no filters.
Okay. No.
Bring it up. Number one.
This is a Canadian band. They're from Montreal. Vultures.
Is it Rush?
Vultures by Folly and the Hunters.
I knew it was going to be a Folly and the Hunters song.
Favorite bands.
Cool. Yeah.
That almost sounds familiar, that one. I may have heard it.
They've never toured America, but...
But if they're on the internet...
They are. I post about them on Facebook all the time, so that might have been...
Maybe that's where...
They're really good. They're a really good band.
...of them doing it in a concert.
Cool.
All right, so my number one, I legit thought at least Erin would probably have this on her list, so I'm surprised she didn't. The Crane Wife by the Decemberists.
Ooh. I'm not a fan, actually.
Really?
No.
We were just talking about the Decemberists on our ride over here. What did I say about you? Asked me what I thought of them.
They were rather Elizabethan at times.
lots of slow songs about Elizabethan women. I think is what I said. Yeah.
Which is fair.
Yeah.
You know, they paint in a certain portion of the canvas.
Necessarily insulting.
Yeah, like I'm not super into the band, but that album in particular and the sort of the storytelling aspect of, you know, the different movements of the Crane Wife part of the story and the retelling of the Japanese folklore, it was really good.
I saw them live once and they basically started with one of those like 15 minute Crane Wife passages and led straight from that into a medley of like two or three other full songs, so they like from the moment they got on stage they were playing music for like a half hour straight. And when they stopped, the crowd was just like exploding with this energy. And the like a 3 days before, I had seen The Shins. And as good as a band they are, their live performance is exactly like their album performance. True. And between songs, they silently switch instruments without engaging in the audience. And it was
lame.
A night and day contrast with like two bands that you can love, but one of their live shows is almost not worth the money, and the other is like transcendent. So...
Yeah, it's a good choice. $50 for a Shins show at one point.
The Decemberists are definitely worth $50 in my book. But in my book, I'm surprised that this has not been a clash. Birdhouse in Your Soul. They Might Be Giants.
Oh, wow.
I knew there would be a They Might Be Giants song on your list.
Yes.
Called it 2 days ago.
But did you pick a different song that you were expecting?
I couldn't think of any songs that they did about birds off the top of my head, which is weird because that's like... one of my favorite They Might Be Giants songs.
See, the thing I like about that song is that you ask a lot of people about They Might Be Giants, and that's very likely to be the one They Might Be Giants song they know. Other people mm-hmm. know Particle Man, but like for a band to have
not concept,
one of the songs that they're most known for actually be a genuinely good song that still reflects their style, mm-hmm. I think that's good. So that's my pick for number one.
So wow, no clashes at all.
No clashes.
We should have all just picked fight songs.
Why didn't we all just pick cool fight songs that have birds as their like mascots?
Yeah,
go Cardinals. Yeah, Falcons.
So I'm gonna go with Rockin' Robin by Bobby Day.
Nice. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Like, that I love that song. And like, so this one time in school, and it was like the third grade. This is kind of a story, but like there was a bathroom in the classroom, and I went in and I was like humming to myself, right? And I didn't realize like everyone in the class could hear me humming.
Oh.
And I come out and like the whole class is like staring at me and laughing. The teacher's just mad at me. And she's like, you know, like you do that again, I'm gonna send you to detention and all this stuff. What? So like I waited a little bit and then I like asked to use the bathroom again and I just sang Rockin' Robin like in the fucking bathroom so that she would kick me out of the class because like I'm like, okay, I'll go like sit and look at a goldfish in the office for like the rest of school. I don't really care. And like I felt like I didn't do anything wrong in the first place. Like I didn't know what the hell I was doing and like I was getting punished, so I was like, well, this is like the perfect time to rebel.
That's good.
Yeah.
So you don't want to be a member of a club that won't let you hum.
Yeah. No. Well, I mean, I, you know, I didn't know what was going on and she was like so hostile when I came out and I was like 7.
Aww.
Or something, you know. Yeah. So I just did not put up. I just did not take no crap. I guess I
was good. Just
an honorary SOB. So there you go, kids. That's the lesson. Take detention, and like let your mind wander and be free because the multiplication table isn't that important.
All right. So that's about all we have planned for our lists.
Yeah.
Do you guys how ever do Bird the alternates? I was gonna up. Say some might like I gotta no. list some alternates.
Aaron, how did you not pick Freebird?
My husband told me to, and I said no. I love the other one.
Here are our alternates: Freebird, Polly by Nirvana, A Crow Left of the Murder by Incubus, Talking Bird by Death Cab for Cutie, which I almost picked. Rooster by Alice Chains, Fly Like an Eagle, Steve Miller Band.
See, I almost put the Steve Miller version and the Seal version as two
separate entities.
When Doves Cry, Prince.
Ooh,
and I don't know whether it would count or not, but Learning to Fly Foo Fighters.
Joy, I'm disappointed in you as a fellow Dave Matthews Band fan that you didn't put Dodo on your list.
Yeah, it's not really one of the ones that I'm like super familiar with. Yeah.
Dodo are also extinct, so they don't count.
So your albatross reminded me I should have put Rime of the Ancient Mariner by Maiden.
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
But I was considering where Eagle's There, which is two different songs by Iron Maiden or the Misfits, depending on who's
catalog. I ain't no goddamn son of a bitch.
You better think about it, baby. but I was trying to be a purist today because both of those are not specifically about the birds or references to what, like jet fighter pilots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But The Bird That You Can't See by Apples and Stereo is what I almost
nobody wanted. Picked Wind Beneath My Wings by Bette Midler. Mama, I'm sorry, I should have listened to you, put Bette Midler on there. And with that, another episode of Cartoon Violence Has a Podcast is coming to an end. Curious Quill, guys, thank you so much for coming and hanging out in this hot room with us and getting all sweaty and talking about stuff. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find us on CuriousQuail.com or on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We are Curious Quail, one word on everything, yeah.
All over the place.
And if they wanted to buy your music, where's the best place to give you the bump?
Predominantly Bandcamp, but, you know, if you're unfamiliar with it, you can always iTunes it.
And if you want CDs, then you can buy it from our Square store on our website, and I will personally be sending them to you.
Nice. And we'll both be playing Frequency Fest on September 11th here in San Jose at our boutique. And then do you guys have any other shows coming up?
Well, when is this coming out?
This is coming out September 1st.
Okay, yeah, so we'll have already played. We'll have had a very good show at Slim's.
How was that show?
Oh my god, the Proto Men were amazing.
That show was amazing.
The Y-axes were, oh my gosh, yes.
Slim's caught on fire.
Oh my gosh, yeah. It was weird. There was a streaker. Yeah, it was really strange.
But yeah, we've got September 16th at San Francisco State at the Depot. with Lords of Sealand and the Y-Axis. So we're pretty pretty stoked about that.
I know a couple of those kids.
Yep. They're awesome people.
Sure.
Yep.
No, they're good. They're good folks. I'm just being a dick. And then, we've got, we've got Frequency Fest, maybe a Bacon Fest.
Maybe, we're hoping for Bacon Fest.
We're hoping, we might be playing the San Jose Bacon Fest, the 5th through the 6th.
It's the San Jose Bacon Festival of America.
My apologies, San Francisco Bacon Festival of America.
Praise of America.
Jesus. That's what we're working on that. We're hoping that we're going to play September 5th through the 6th, I believe. Maybe the 7th.
Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, we're gonna have more information, and we'll probably put a little addendum.
They don't run out of bacon this year. That was kind of.
Did they run out of bacon?
Yeah,
that's tragic.
How do you run out of bacon at the Bacon Festival? Like,
I don't know. People,
bacon was in higher demand than they thought.
Yeah, of course, bacon was in higher demand than they
thought. We got some October shows too in the works.
Yeah, the first weekend of October and the Halloween
in San Francisco at the Showdown. Now it was 50 Mason, and the 50 Mason. Got sold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just shut down randomly.
What's the Showdown?
Showdown, it's right near the Warfield. In the good part of Market.
Oh yeah, the best
There's
part.
Air quotes going on there.
Yeah. No, we used to have a practice space in that neighborhood, and it's cracktastic.
Oh yeah, Turk and Taylor practice space was...
Yeah, I think it's like Market and 6th, basically.
Yeah. Okay. But and you can follow us. We're on the internet, facebook.com/... The Real Cartoon Violence. We're at Cartoon Violins on Twitter. I'm at Prof Robot on Twitter.
And I'm at Doc Octave. And all our show notes for this podcast, all our flyers for upcoming shows, and anything else you want to know about us.
Previous episodes of the podcast.
CartoonViolenceMusic.com.
Yeah, go there. Listen to stuff. And give us a rating on iTunes. Review us. Tell us that you like us, because we need that stuff to get better rankings.
Popular and cool with all the cool kids.
If we're ever gonna be cool and popular, you gotta give us them 5 stars.
We don't want to be on the yearbook team forever. We want to be prom king and king.
I'll tell you what, if you give us 5 stars, we'll give you a back rub at our show if you come.
Hey, that's a good trade.
Yeah, I think that's fair. All right. So until next time, we'll see you later.
Thanks for having a podcast with us, Curious Quail.
Yay.
Bye. And now we sing the DuckTales theme.
Life is like a hurricane here in Duckburg. Race cars, lasers, aeroplanes. It's a duck blur.
Do might solve a mystery
or rewrite history. DuckTales, woo! Every day they're out there making DuckTales, woo! Tales of daring, do bad, and good luck tales, woo!
I'm the only one that knows lyrics, right?
Danger lurks behind you. There's a stranger out to find you. What to do? Just grab onto some DuckTales, woo! Every day they're out there making DuckTales, woo! Not Tiffany tales, forgotten tales of DuckTales, woo!
It's close.
We skipped one, but that's cool.
Yeah, we don't need that verse or whatever.
Curious Quail edit.
Against all odds, it starts to make sad hands, and you feel.